Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. This past weekend was quite exciting for sports fans with the World Cup starting and the New York Knicks winning their first championship since 1973. However, investors also got some good news with reports that the U.S. and Iran have agreed to a deal that will reopen the Strait of Hormuz. All that sets the table for a constructive market response this week. So joining me here at the New York Podcast Studio. Glad to welcome back for the CIO Strategy Snapshot, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Trejo. Jason, great to be at the table with you. Good Monday morning.
Happy Monday morning. It's a fantastic start to the week.
Absolutely. We were talking about the Knicks last week, and great to
see. It was truly historic, yes. Yep.
So let's get into it, Jason. A lot to catch up on. I mentioned that we did see a reported U.S.-Iran deal. So what does that mean for the economic and market outlook? I know more to come with that, perhaps, later in the week with the signing.
Well, it appears to be more of a memorandum of understanding rather than like a concrete deal at this point in time. It's expected to be signed on Friday, June 19th. That will lead to further negotiations of a fully fledged deal that would do things along the lines like negotiate Iran's nuclear capabilities, any sort of unblocking of frozen Iranian assets and sanction curbs. There'll definitely be probably some pushback, domestically for President Trump, as the details sort of come to light. And so there is a chance that this does fall apart between, now and Friday. But as of Monday morning, the markets and investors are sort of taking it pretty much as a as a done deal. So you can see oil prices are down 5%. Interest rates are lower. Equities at the moment, the S&P is up about 1%. And we saw across the board, overseas equity markets up even more. So very kind of positive, reaction to that. From a market perspective, like we've been sort of moving in this direction. A few weeks ago, there were already reports of a deal being close, and it's taken a while to sort of get to something that's more confirmed by both sides that a deal is now close to being signed. So the market, you could say, was already pricing in this outcome, but it does further reduce sort of the tail risk of oil prices spiking higher, that causes inflation to be sticky, that would cause rates to be elevated. So a positive development, but one that was sort of somewhat anticipated at this point in time.
So Jason, outside of geopolitics, the other big market event this week is the Fed's FOMC meeting culminating on Wednesday. So what are you expecting from this meeting, and what do you expect the Fed to do going forward?
Well, let's just set the context by talking about what the market is expecting at this point in time. As of this morning, the market is pricing still for one full Fed rate hike by next March, and cumulative like 1.2 hikes by next, the second quarter of next year. This is down, 10 days ago after we got the May payrolls report, the market was pricing a full cut or hike by December and 1.7 hikes by June. So we've already seen a decent sort of dialing back of that. In terms of what to expect for the FOMC meeting that culminates on Wednesday, any change in the Fed policy rate is very, very unlikely. No cuts, no hikes. I think that'd be a true shock if that happened. What is expected, pretty widely expected, is that the Fed statement, the FOMC statement, will drop its easing bias to be more balanced, indicating that the next move could be either a hike or a cut. The summary of economic projections, including the dot plot, will be updated. It's expected that the median member will, expect no cuts this year. So the focus is more on next year. That could entail, the median will have one or maybe even no cuts, but there'll probably be multiple members, not a majority, but at least a handful who would actually want to have a hike next year is the next move. Now, in the ballpark, it could be extreme one way or another. That could sort of real new information for the markets, but I think what's really going to sort of matter for the markets is what Kevin Warsh says in his first press conference as the new Fed chair. Warsh is sort of on the record as saying he's not a fan of forward guidance. So he might actually downplay some of the what comes out of the economic projections, saying like this is not an official forecast. The dot plots are not meant to be a guide. Something that Jay Powell said, but he might be more adamant about that. He'll be asked certainly questions regarding the Fed independence, what the path is on that. And he'll, I'm sure, reiterate what he said during his Senate testimony, believing strongly in Fed independence. So the real focus and the thing that could sort of move the markets most is what does he say in answers to questions regarding views on, how does he think about inflation? Is he focused more on the, these trim mean measures on core? Because depending on which inflation measure you choose to focus on, you can have alter your path on what you think the Fed should be doing. he'll be asked questions about like AI and productivity, and that can be disinflationary. Should that justify cuts? So however he chooses to answer these questions, markets will be trying to glean like what does he actually really think? And even though that may not influence Fed policy this meeting or even the next couple of meetings, it would indicate how he's going to try and steer future conversations with the Fed. And that can indicate, you know, how strongly he might be trying to push for cuts or no cuts or even potentially hikes. So that's the key thing to sort of take away is how will the markets interpret, you know, Warsh's comments. And given it's his first press conference, you know, that'll be subject to interpretation, I'm sure.
So all eyes will be on the Fed within a couple of days with that press conference in particular. So, Jason, as you pointed out, the market is still pricing for the Fed to hike rates. But in your latest blog, which is titled In the Nick of Time, great name, you argue that the economy is unlikely to overheat and is actually much better positioned. So, Jason, what is your current assessment of the economy?
I'd point out Nick is spelled with a K.
Did you clarify that?
So, look, there's certain concerns, certainly a couple of weeks ago, of the U.S. economy kind of overheating. And that happened after we got the May payrolls report. You know, it beat expectations, and the prior 2 months were revised higher. So the three-month average of job growth was 188,000, whereas, you know, most investors and the Fed itself would expect that, you know, somewhere there may be in the neighborhood of 50,000 is sort of the break-even rate that, you know, what you need to have that job growth to keep the unemployment rate stable. So if this job growth stays at those levels, then this, you know, leads to a tightening labor market. It can lead to, you know, faster growth than expected. It can fuel kind of those inflation, you know, concerns. You also have consumer spending data that shows continued sort of resiliency. We will get May retail sales data later this week, but higher frequency credit card data indicates that consumers continue to spend. Now the World Cup has started, you know, we can see a bit of an uptick, you know, related to, you know, sort of tourism. You know, not dramatic, but something that, again, near term is directionally more positive for consumer spending. So again, all that suggests, you know, growth is holding up. None of this should be particularly surprising. You know, back in the beginning of January, you know, the expectation was growth would accelerate in the first half of the year, kind of peaking in Q2 because of the fiscal stimulus that was passed last year, because of tariff effects would fade, financial conditions were easing. So getting growth accelerating, getting a strong job market in the middle of the second quarter, that shouldn't be surprising. I think investors were perhaps overestimating the negative impact of higher oil prices, higher interest rates. And that's reflected in these various economic surprise indices. You know, some of them are at three-year highs, indicating, again, that investors did not expect the data to be quite as strong. Again, that's sort of fueling some of these inflation concerns. There's also details, you know, recently in the past couple of reports suggesting that, you know, AI-related demand is helping to be, you know, sort of adding to inflation. You know, there are some shelter components that are being sort of also distorted by the, you know, the government shutdown last fall. Looking forward to where we have more comfort in this overheating not being likely is that, you know, these growth impulses that were positive, they should fade in the second half. So we could see growth sort of moderate in the second half of this year rather than accelerating. The inflation data we got for May, if you look at the details, it does indicate that sort of tariff-related inflation is coming down. Assuming the deal that between the U.S. and Iran does lead to a sustainable opening of the Strait of Hormuz, that oil flow starts to normalize, that oil prices gradually go lower, again, that gives confidence that, you know, at least the headline numbers will kind of moderate and probably even peaked in with the May data. So again, that gives comfort that the direction of travel is that the economy is not going to overheat, that inflation is going to come down, which is, I should add back regarding the Fed, is why we actually expect the Fed to cut rates twice. We did push back our timing of that to be March and June for next year. Look, even if the Fed chooses not to cut, or it's further along the lines, so like the timing-wise, the bar for hikes is quite high. You know, you'd need to see growth above, I think, 2.5% sustainably. You'd need to see the unemployment rate continue to tick lower towards 4% or less, and around 4.3%. And for inflation expectations to kind of continue to drift hard, that get the Fed worried. We don't think any of those are sort of, you know, likely to happen. Inflation is likely to go lower, and therefore the Fed, you know, is likely to kind of believe should be kind of cutting rates to get to more sort of a neutral territory. So all that suggests no overheating, at least that's a low risk, and that path towards sort of a nice kind of soft landing as we go into next year, that still seems like it's on track.
So, Jason, at this point now that we have a better understanding of CIO's outlook for monetary policy, thoughts on the integrity of the U.S. economy, let's end as we typically do with asset allocation. In light of all of these these developments, Jason, what are you recommending that investors do right now?
Well, if we think about this overheating concerns, if you look at where rates are, like, you know, the 2-year, the 10-year, you know, today versus just even sort of like roughly 10 days ago before the economic data started to come in quite strong, they've kind of essentially fully, you know, unwound, you know, where they were. The S&P, as of before the market opened, was still below, you know, its all-time high by about 2.4%. That gap will close to some extent, you know, today. But if you look at equity market performance over the past, you know, 10 days or so, even though the S&P is down slightly, what we've seen is a broadening out of performance. You know, some of the more defensive sectors, but also cyclical sectors like financials, have actually outperformed. We've seen small caps kind of outperform over this time period. Same thing with kind of an equal-weighted S&P 500 index. So what we've seen is a bit of a rotation, and some of that is it's twofold. One is investors get comfortable about the macro environment, that inflation, perhaps, you know, the economy won't overheat. You'll see a sort of broadening of performance, investors willing to go into the more economically sensitive or cyclical parts of the markets, like financials, like consumer discretionary, like small caps. We can see it outside of the U.S. You know, European equities tend to be more, you know, kind of tied to the economic cycle, and they're bouncing quite a bit, you know, on Monday morning as a result of this deal news. The second factor is, look, there's been a very strong performance for U.S. equities in the 2 months prior to all this. So, you know, basically in April and May, heavily concentrated, led by, you know, the tech sector, led by kind of AI-related investment, semiconductors, like the SOX index was up, you know, like, you know, 80%. So I think, you know, some sort of rotation, taking some chips off the table, you know, is sort of understandable. If this deal holds, sustains, I think this rotation is likely to continue. Which is why sort of the kind of the broadening out should persist, and why we would continue to say, you know, diversify across equities, you know, including things like favoring other sectors like financials, healthcare, discretionary, and other parts of the world, especially kind of, you know, Asia, which will, you know, would benefit again from easing oil prices, you know, more access to energy supplies, because, you know, some of that part of the world was definitely impacted by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz.
Jason, always helpful to hear your macro, your market insights and guidance when it comes to positioning to begin a trading week. So thank you for dropping by for Top of the Morning, and I do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Well, I also look forward to that and seeing you at the Knicks parade on Thursday morning. I know you love a
crowd. I don't know about
people.
That.
No, I'm sure I'll be able to find
I'll be
you
there in spirit, Jason. Okay. But good stuff. Jason Drake, thank you very much for dropping by. Again, I want to highlight the blog from Jason Trejo, which we have been referring to on today's episode. In the Nick of Time, it's available now up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.